Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, beautiful Gulf Coast Sunday morning to you. Let me remind you, it's all about American summer. It's all about American summer. We're in the midst of American summer. Don't wait for somebody in New York to tell you when summer starts. They don't know. This is summer on the Gulf Coast, our first great summer. Let me remind you what happens during American summer. It starts about, it starts mid to late April when the temperatures start hitting the 80s pretty frequently. Continues into May. We're in the midst of it. We're in the middle of it. And it will last to June 21st. There are a lot of good things that are happening. But one thing you need to remember, and listen, warning right now, one thing about American summer is that we don't get those regular showers that we get in the middle of summer. So those pop-up thunderstorms, they don't happen very often. And that's because those pop-up thunderstorms are about differences in temperature between the Gulf and land that don't occur this time of year. And here's the other thing we don't get, because we've moved away from these cold fronts that move into the northern part of the state, but don't make it down as far as Mobile. We don't get those cold fronts coming in anymore. It's pretty rare. You had your last cold front last week. I would say it's going to be very unusual if you get another one. And what that means is it's going to start getting very warm during the day. Temperatures into the 90s. You can expect that now. It's going to start happening. And the other thing that's going to happen is it's not going to rain. We're going to go for days without rain, and we might get a little rain today. You got a little bit of a chance of rain today and tomorrow, but you can expect for the next, let's put it out 10 days. It's going to be hot. That's going to dry things out, and there's not going to be any rain there behind it. That's great for a lot of things. Your tomatoes, they're going to love it. I mean, those tomatoes, most of the tomatoes you're growing, they were developed in Mexico. They were developed in the mountains of Mexico. They like this. They like these hot days. They like the fact that the temperature is going to drop to around 70 or even into the 60s at night. All that's going to be really good. And the dry weather is going to be just fine, but you're going to have to remember to water. You're going to have to remember to water. If you put out things this spring, this is the time of year when you lose a lot of those plants, because we forget that this is American summer here on the Gulf Coast, and it gets dry. We get days without rainfall. So just a heads up on that. Just a heads up on that. You know, the other great thing about American summer, as Taxman will not let me forget, is that the tomatoes are coming in. And Taxman is very happy, by the way, with his Sakura tomatoes. He's eating them as we speak, he tells me. But they're fine little tomatoes that are very quick to produce. A lot of you are, and they grow in clusters. You can grow them in containers. That's what he grew them in. Grew them in pine bark in a container. And boy, he's already harvesting those tomatoes, because they're 50-day tomatoes. They're 54-day tomatoes. They produce very quickly. It's one of the nice things about going with some of those cherry tomatoes, and the flavor I hear from lots of people is outstanding. A lot of those small tomatoes are very good. Let's talk about picking tomatoes now. If you've got problems with your tomatoes, this is the time to watch. This is the time to go out. If you get a chance, take your radio with you. Go out and check your tomatoes today. Make sure everything's okay. If everything's not okay, you give us a call. We'll walk you through it. We'll figure it out. But one of the things you're going to start doing now is harvesting tomatoes. And I just want to make a case for some things here about tomatoes. One, don't make using tomatoes complicated. There's no need to do it. There's a lot of myths about how to use tomatoes and how to make a tomato sauce and what kind of tomatoes you've got to do, and you got to get rid of the pulp and you got to get rid of the seeds. All that is completely bogus. Most of the most of these things about getting rid of the seeds, it's all about appearance. It's not about anything else. And in fact, the seeds of tomatoes and the pulp and the skins of tomatoes are where most of the flavor resides. When you start stripping that out, which a lot of people do, you strip out a lot of the flavor. Do tomato seeds contribute to bitterness? Let me just say, absolutely not. No. Under no circumstances. Another great myth about what causes bitterness. Bitterness is caused by, probably cooking your tomatoes too hot and letting them scorch on the bottom of your pan. That's a great way to cause bitterness, but you can't blame yourself for it. You got to blame something, so you blame those seeds, right? You couldn't have scorched your tomatoes. It must be. It's got to be the seeds. No, seeds don't cause any problems. So when you're making a sauce out of tomatoes, you're going to have a lot of tomatoes coming up. Don't worry about it. Just throw the whole thing in. You know those little tomatoes, like Taxman is eating now, the Securas, but lots of others. Sun Gold, which is an absolutely delicious tomato, one of the, just really highly rated, a lot of taste tests. Some of the other tomatoes that we've recommended, like the Veracruz tomato called Coyote and some of the others, they're prolific. And you can make great jams out of them. You can make great dishes out of them. Just throw them in the pot. Spread them out. Don't worry about the seeds. The seeds aren't going to hurt anybody. The pulp is delicious. It's a really fun thing to do, to make lots of things. Here's another great thing to do with your little cherry tomatoes. And Taxman, you may try this. You're going to get a ton of little Sakura tomatoes, for example, and some of the other tomatoes that are out there, little cherry tomatoes, Matt's Wild Cherry, and some of the others that we've recommended, the Mexico Midget. All of those tomatoes are really good roasted. Really good roasted. So one of the things you might try when you get a bunch of them is just roast a big pan of them. And my old friend and cousin by marriage, Barbara Pleasant, recommends that before you freeze tomatoes, go ahead and roast them first. Then freeze them if you want them. And it's a great way of preserving the flavor and concentrating and not having so much moisture if you're going to freeze those tomatoes. So just some things to think about there with your tomatoes now that they're coming in. The flowers are coming in. That's the great part of American summer that I love. All of these flowers that you read about, the cosmos, the cleomies, all of these, the zinnias, they're going to be at their peak now. They're going to be beautiful. They're really great. Enjoy them now. The purple cone flowers. Your sunflowers, if you planted them at the right time, they should be coming in pretty soon too. And this dry weather, and even the hot days, it's going to be very appealing to all of those plants. They're going to do really well. They're not going to do so well when Gulf summer gets here. We have another suite of plants we deal with then, but there's some great things. The one thing that's going to be a problem, and you may already be having this problem, is that the weeds love this weather too. And they're out there growing big time. We're going to talk a little bit more about weeds. You know, here's the thing, and I'm just going to talk a little bit more about this this show, is I've finally gotten to the point that I actually enjoy weeding. That is crazy, isn't it? That's absolutely crazy. But here's the reason why, and I got a special reason why, and we're going to talk about that on the show this morning. We got a special reason why that I'm really beginning to enjoy weeding that this morning. The reason I enjoy weeding is that weeds are the most useful plants and mulches and cover crops you could have in your garden. You read all about you've got to buy a cover crop so you'll improve your soil. Nothing is going to improve your soil like weeds. It's amazing. It's amazing what they do. It's amazing how well they work. I'm going to talk a little bit about how to use those weeds effectively so that your garden is much, much better than it used to be. And once you realize you're managing the weeds, you're not just getting rid of the weeds, you're actually managing the weeds. You're making use of them just like they're a crop. You know, it's not such a bad thing to do the weeding anymore. I just don't even think about it. I just say, okay, I'm managing these weeds. Hey, we're gonna take a break here. But give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. Let's talk about American summer.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Let's talk just a little bit about those weeds. It's a funny thing. We see weeds as the enemy. One of the things that you can do when you're managing a garden, there are some weeds that are difficult. There are some weeds that are difficult to figure out how to manage. But most weeds in your garden are relatively easy to manage. And what you really want to do is, there's no need to feel like you've got to eliminate every weed, but you do want to manage them. And you do want to get everything you can from those weeds. Weeds are much better. Listen, weeds are much better at extracting nutrients from the garden than any other plant you have. They are very efficient at it. They haven't been bred to produce weird, big, gigantic fruits like tomatoes. They haven't been bred to produce weird, oversized flowers like zinnias. They are there to make use of that soil, and they are elegantly adapted. That's why they're there in your yard, because you didn't plant them. They're elegantly adapted to the conditions you've created and to mining that soil for the nutrients that are there. You can use that. So what I do, and particularly this time of year, and it's real easy before they go to seed, just pull them up. Just lay them out as a mulch on top of the ground, on around your plants. It makes a ton of difference. They make an ideal mulch. Here's why. If you take grass clippings and you lay them down, those grass clippings tend to mat if you put them down too thick, don't they? And water doesn't get through them, and neither does oxygen. Sometimes leaves will do the same thing. But weeds, when you lay them down as a mulch, that never happens, because weeds are... they're mostly stem. They got a lot of stem. They have a good ratio of stem to leaves. That means those stems don't flatten out and break down. They make an open lattice structure in the mulch that allows water and oxygen to seep through. So you can put a pile of weeds. You make a big pile of weeds around your plant, and you don't have to worry about depriving them of oxygen. You don't have to worry about depriving them of moisture. So they make an ideal mulch, and they shade everything underneath them. Now here's what else that happens when you put those weeds down. Even if you have weed seeds, because you can make a nice little pile of those weeds around your plant, the weed seeds won't germinate, because almost all the weeds you have in your yard require light to germinate. And that little pile of weeds, doesn't matter if the weed seeds fall through. Boom. Won't happen. We'll talk a little bit more about weeds this morning. We got a lot to discuss about how to manage them, but we got a lot of callers. Let's go to Paul. I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Bill. You sounded mighty good this morning. I'm glad you told me all about those weeds. If you got any extra ones, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Bill, the first
yes, sir.
Planting of okra, I think, was consumed by some animals, and I will not use an adjective before their name, but we don't have much okra.
Our
second planting, I guess it's not too late to plant okra.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
What are we going to do to keep the animals from chewing them as soon as they appear above the ground?
So do you think these were deer? Do you think they
no,
were
no,
rabbits?
No, it couldn't be deer. We got a chain link fence. I mean, we got a fence around the yard.
Yeah, yeah. So you think it may be rabbits? You think it may be bugs?
As little as I know about it, I would guess it's something like bigger than bugs that would chew them up, and just eat them. I'm thinking that's what happened to most of them.
Wow. So I got to think a little bit about this and figure out
squirrels,
what it is.
Maybe.
Cause, yeah.
Could squirrels do that?
Squirrels? So here's the question. Squirrels will do any bizarre thing you can imagine. And here's what happens. So if you have one squirrel will do bizarre things, but because it's only one squirrel, you'll never notice. But if you've got 10 squirrels, because, for example, somebody's feeding the birds and there are a lot of seeds, or there's a big pecan grove and it's concentrating the squirrel populations, all of that bizarre behavior can just really go overboard, and squirrels can decimate a crop. I have never seen them eat seedlings, but I can imagine they would do that. I can imagine they would do that. Here's what I would do. Here's the simple thing. Can you get chicken wire? Just get a little bit of chicken wire. When you sow those seeds, just make a little hoop tunnel over the top of it with the chicken wire.
Mm-hmm.
And let it come up, and then we'll know if it's an insect or whether it's squirrels or something else. Mm-hmm. If you're seeing a lot of squirrels, I suspect that's what it is. That could well be. It's a little bizarre. It's not what squirrels would normally do, but when you get a lot of squirrels, and they do bizarre things sometimes. And they may be going for that little seed underneath. They may recognize that there's a little seed under there that they can chew on or eat. Mm. But I would put just a little bit of chicken wire on top, and I think that would solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do that?
It'd be easier than standing there with a BB gun, wouldn't it?
It would be. It would be. And, of course, you got to be a good shot. I would do that and let them get a little size, and then you'll have to pull it off. I don't think they're going to bother them. My bet is they're not going to bother the seedlings once they get a little height on them.
Yeah.
They're probably looking for that little seed underneath. That's the remnant of that seed underneath.
I don't think we ever had this happen before in a number of years.
Yeah. Is anybody feeding the birds?
You asked me to keep you updated on what was it that we
JP is
sugar snap peas. And I think we planted them 2 or 3 weeks too late. We did get a couple of, a couple of meals out of them, but if we had planted them 2 or 3 weeks earlier, I suspect we would have gotten more.
Yeah, the powdery mildew gets to be a big problem. Hey, JP, is anybody around you feeding birds?
Not that I know of. It could very well be number of houses in the neighborhood, quite a few. So it could well be.
Yeah, and sometimes just a bird feeder in a yard next to you or not too far away, if somebody's feeding lots of birds, the squirrels just go berserk because they're eating all of the things that drop out. Even if they have ways to keep them out of the feeders, it can really concentrate birds. But I would just put that, I'd just put that little, just a little bit of chicken wire, just put it over in a little hoop there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you ever need some squirrel meat, bring you any weapon.
JP, I will,
I'll let
thank
you. Entertain them.
All right.
Bill, nice talking, God bless. Take care.
You too. Good to hear from you. Got another caller here, Charlie. Robbie, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, man, I just wanted to call in. Enjoyed your show last week about the fireflies.
Oh, good.
Been camping quite a bit up here at Chickasaboga Park, and it's just been a light show every night this spring. It was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So it is great. And, you know, we're I'm trying to do a little bit more research on fireflies, trying to figure out what kind of fireflies are native, were originally native in South Mobile County. Going to try to do a little bit of a, and in Mobile County and all along the Gulf Coast, just do a little bit of research on the different species. So I'll be reporting back on that. We'll know a little bit more about where they all occurred.
I did want to say one more thing. They're gone now. Now, I don't know. I saw him come through here spraying for mosquitoes. I don't know if he killed all the lightning bugs, too, or not.
Oh, man. So they did spray
them. I just saw a handful this weekend. Just a handful, where it had been unbelievable the previous week.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good question, and I don't know. I'll have to check on it. One of the – and a lot of species have a period when – they're really intense, and then they'll go away. It may last about 3 or 4 weeks, and then they disappear. Yep. So it may be the spraying. One of the things, because they're relatively large, the spray might not affect them as much, but it may disorient them enough that it causes it causes a problem.
I have really enjoyed the show. Your show on fireflies and the show up here every weekend. It's been awesome.
All right, great. Good to hear from you. Thanks,
bud. Thank you.
All right, Charlie. Got a break. Ooh, we're going to be back. Hold on. We're going to be back.
It's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County? Down by the Green River, where paradise lay. Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train is hauled away.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, let's get a move on this. So Ronnie sent me this beautiful picture of a flower and says, this is another what is it question. Ronnie, I don't know where you saw it, but and I don't have enough of a picture to be sure, but I'm going to take a leap here. And I can tell you that it's an iris. It's one of our native iris. That's no problem. Got no problem telling you that. It's one of the ancestors of the things we call Louisiana iris. Yes, we have Louisiana iris native in Mobile. It's just there's a lot of them over there too. But this is one, I would call this one, I think this is Iris brevicaulis, the zigzag iris. So if you look at that stem, and the stem kind of goes like a zigzag as it goes up, and the stem doesn't sit high up, it kind of leans over just a little bit. I think that's what you're looking at. It's Iris brevicaulis. It's a beautiful iris. It's a beautiful wild native iris, an incredible thing. Those of you, you might check out Flickr. You can see a picture of this thing that Ronnie sent me. It's really neat. Jesse in Satsuma is asking me about weed identification. Yes, we can do that. He has a great, beautiful picture of one of my favorite weeds, which is one of the great edible weeds. In fact, it's a delicacy in France. It's called rattlesnake weed, is what we call it. Those little roots, these little white roots that kind of look like a rattle, are absolutely delicious. Wash them off very good. They're very mild flavored. You can cut them up and put them in salads. And just eat them that way. You can lightly saute them. They're just beautiful things. Rattlesnake weeds, a beautiful thing that a lot of people have coming up in their yards right now. And that's what you got. So as you're pulling those, you can make good use of them. A beautiful picture of a swallowtail kite from Greg. That's really nice to see, Greg. We'll talk about swallowtails here in a minute. But Brenda, I'm listening. What's up?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. We have a big elephant ear plant, and it's growing a flower out of it.
Well, yes, indeed, they do that. And they're going to do it very quickly after a mild winter like we've had. But they always produce those spathe-like flowers. And it's, you know, I think some people don't notice because they get kind of weedy. and the flowers are hidden among the foliage sometimes. But they're always there. Usually it happens late in summer because of the mild winter. It's happening a little earlier this year. And so you're getting a flower maybe before the foliage hides it all. But, yeah, they form flowers a lot.
It looks a little like a canna lily.
That's right. It's related to calla lilies. And it's related to Jack in the Pulpit and calla lilies and a bunch of other plants in that family. So it's a cool-looking thing.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It was
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome, Brenda. Good to hear from you.
You too. You have a wonderful day, and thank you for what you do.
All right. Thank you. So those elephant ears, you know, a lot of interesting things are going to be blooming early this year. And we've talked about it. The bananas are going to be blooming early for a lot of people. I don't know whether to leave those early blooms on. I'm very interested. A lot of you have been sending me pictures of bananas that are producing their flowers starting in May, early May, and some even in late April. Listen, if you've got a banana that's doing that, that's producing a flower already, keep a record of when that flower emerged, when you notice that flower emerging, and tell me, and then I want, you know, it's going to take about 90 days for those fruits to start being ready to harvest. And about 90 days from now, 90 to 100 days from now, you can cut that stalk, bring it inside, and the fruit will get, in these warm temperatures, that fruit will go ahead and yellow up. It'll be very nice. But tell me whether they are stringy or not. My experience is that the bananas that produce too early in spring, they get a little bit stringy. And I have thoughts on why that is. But this is a good test because a lot of you have those early bananas this year. Usually I like for my bananas to develop, to emerge a little bit later in June. That's a perfect time. Early June's a perfect time, in my estimation. But let's, you know, prove me wrong on this. I'm curious. Let's look at these early bananas. Let's see if they still have that nice creamy texture that bananas have. Just remind me when your bananas produce. Let's talk about that, and you give me a call, and let's look at that. Jesse, I just want to return to the question of your rattlesnake weed. You know, it's one of those things. Managing rattlesnake weed is really not such a big issue once you find out they're really useful and really good to eat. They're great to eat. And really delicious. This is the time of year when they form those tubers. If you're going to weed rattlesnake weed this time of year, you need to go ahead and enjoy the tubers with it. Just dig those tubers up, and as long as they're not in a place that's next to the house or something where the soil is not so good, as long as they're in good soil and you haven't herbicided them, just those tubers are going to be absolutely delicious. It's a lot of fun. And it's a great way to control them as a weed. If you're one of those, as my grandmother would say, tukey people, this is an old southern word. I can't find a good reference to it. But tukey people who are really particular about the kinds of things they'll eat, If you're one of those people and don't want to eat rattlesnake weed, even though it's delicious, and you just want to get rid of it, let me tell you a little secret, Jesse, and anybody else who's got rattlesnake weed. This time of year, if you don't dig up the roots, it's very hard to control. And digging up all the root pieces can be a bit of a problem. But here's the way to easily control rattlesnake weed. Those roots are going to sprout sometime in, it's going to go dormant during the summer. Always does. Almost always does. During hot weather, during the summer, it's going to go dormant. And it's going to reemerge in October. And it's going to reemerge by using all of the innards in that little rattlesnake root. And it'll deplete the root to produce foliage. If you just remove the foliage in October, November, and December when it first emerges, and do it twice, you will have used up the root system. And there won't be anything left. It's very easy to do. You don't even have to dig it up. So October, November, December is a great time to control rattlesnake weed. If you do it then, it's very easy. You don't even have to dig it up. You may have to remove the foliage twice, remove that foliage. That's where it gets a head start, is because it is winter growing. It gets a head start on October, November, December. You don't worry about it until April, and then by then it's already got it figured out. It's already got all that energy stored down in the root, and it knows you're not going to go to the trouble of digging it up unless you're going to eat it. So it's got it figured out. You just got to beat it at its own game. October, November, December, that's the time to remove the foliage on those rattlesnake weeds. Carolyn Baymanette asked me, is American summer too late to fertilize my lawn and yard with cottonseed? No, it's a fine time to do it. It's a great time to do it. It's the great thing about cottonseed meal, Carol, is you can put it on almost any time, and it's really hard to screw it up. I think maybe after August, I might be a little reluctant to put it on the lawn, but probably even then it's not going to matter. It's very fine to put on this time of year. It will be used a little more quickly by the plants because it is warm and the temperatures are warm, so it's going to go into the plants pretty quickly. One thing to do this time of year, by the way, now that it's American summer, and Carol, I'm glad you reminded me to tell people this. Raise your lawnmower a little bit. Just go ahead and raise that lawnmower. Fertilize if you like. But raise the lawnmower. It's very, very important that you do that. And if you're fertilizing, it's particularly important that you raise the lawnmower. Trust me on this. Even for centipede, if you've been cutting your centipede 1.5 to 2 inches in spring, that's fine. But this time of year, go ahead and raise it to 3 inches because this heat is going to stress that lawn. You'll have a lot fewer weeds, a lot fewer disease problems if you go ahead and make that transition. The other thing to think about very carefully is, St. Augustine. You can cut St. Augustine at 2.5 or 3 inches. I've done it. I do it. In the year when the night temperatures are still cool, when the grass is just beginning to grow, that's fine. In fact, it probably makes some sense to cut it a little lower then. But this time of year, let that St. Augustine come on up to 4 inches if you can. Get as much as 4 inches of height. You'll have far fewer problems with that lawn.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Sorry for that little bit of an interruption there, but we're back. We should be in good shape now. I've got some pictures sent in. Let me let's see who sent that picture to us. That was sent by Thomas. It's a picture of a beautiful in a beautiful garden setting. And there is in that garden setting a thing coming up with these beautiful pink, lush cascades of flowers, pinkish lavender. Lavender pink with white bases and a very large flower, and underneath it little tiny what seem to be yellow flowers. Well, it's what you've got is a ginger, Thomas. It's one of the Sercuma gingers. It's the Sercuma group of gingers. Sometimes they're called hidden gingers, but yours is not very hidden, is it? It's actually real prominent there with the foliage. It's one of the Sercuma gingers. I'm not sure which. The fact that it is so prominent leads me to believe it's one of the Australian hidden gingers, but it's a really nice looking south. It's from Southeast Asia, but we grow them pretty well here. They're related to turmeric. Turmeric is a type of Sercuma ginger, as opposed to the ginger that you just the regular gingers that you buy at the store. Turmeric is a slightly different kind. It's in that hidden ginger family. So that's what we got there. And Taxman tells me rattlesnake weed grows real well in hanging baskets. So that's an interesting thing. You know, it could be an interesting way. Taxman, does it form roots real well in those hanging baskets? Because that would be an interesting way to grow it and eat it. You know, it's a very interesting thing. Cultivating rattlesnake weed is not such a bad idea. It would be good to do it in a soil that made it easy to develop long roots, just like you were growing carrots. The flavor of those roots is really very nice. It's a little bit of a turnip flavor, just a little bit of a turnip flavor mixed with a little bit of this kind of a milky quality that reminds me of turnips cooked in milk. It's really interesting, but really delicious. Very delicious if you just eaten fresh. Nothing wrong with it eaten fresh. Just wash those roots. Or if you want to saute them lightly, don't cook them too much, because they got a lot of moisture in them, and they don't need to be cooked too much. You think I'm making it up that they're a delicacy. In France, a very close relative of this plant that's virtually indistinguishable, it's such a close relative, is called, people who speak French, help me out. I think it's called croon or something like that, very close to that. And it's a delicacy there. It has beautiful roots, a really nice thing. Just by the way, John Grand Bay, I'm listening. What's up?
I got kudzu coming up in the yard, and I've been trying to fight it. You know any way to get rid of it? I done tried a couple of things.
Well, John, how is it? So, the first thing you got to do is it coming from a neighbor's yard?
No, it come in the yard. I got the power line running underneath my property. On back of my property.
Yeah.
But they put in a new subdivision behind me, but I still got kudzu in the very back of my property.
Yes. So is the kudzu coming from that power line?
Yes.
Yeah. And is there any way to control it on the power line?
Yes, it's fine. It's wide open. They got power line. It's on the back edge of my property. I got 10 feet of that right away on my property.
Yeah. So here's the key. Yeah. Keep it cut and mowed. Kudzu cannot tolerate mowing. Let me tell you a story about kudzu, John. Every property I've ever had that my dad ever had growing up, he had several, and every time, and he raised horses. And every time he had kudzu, he turned those horses out on it, and within 2 years the kudzu was gone. I mean, you couldn't, it just was gone. It was amazing how fast it happened. Because kudzu cannot tolerate frequent munching down. It needs to become a vine. And once you mow it, if you mow it frequently, that kudzu is going to disappear. So keep mowing it, and mowing it most frequently when it's near your house is a really good way of controlling it. Nothing is better than simply mowing kudzu. It gets to be really hard to mow once it starts developing vines. That's the only problem, isn't it? Because those vines get all wrapped up in your mower, and it's really hard to mow it. But if you can mow it before it turns into vines, and just keep it mowed down, if it has turned into vines already, sling blade it down so that you can get the mower in there. If mowers don't work for you, goats will do it quick. They love kudzu. Goats, they love kudzu. They'll selectively harvest it. Horses love it. They'll selectively harvest it. Cows are the same way. So they will eat kudzu in preference to anything else, and it will just wipe it out. That's the easiest way.
Cut down. When the vine come up, I clip it off with a pair of shears, then mow it.
Then mow it. Just keep mowing that area, and it will control it. It may take a couple of years of mowing, but within a couple of years, you're not going to see much of that kudzu left.
Okay, thank you.
John, give it a try. If it doesn't work, you call me back and fuss at me.
Okay.
All right. Good to hear from you. John and Foley, I'm listening. What's up?
I have a question, Bill Finch, about Flexogen garden hoses.
Yeah. I used to love them, but...
I purchased one many years ago on your recommendation. Are they the same now as they were back then or not?
No, they're not. And they've changed the formula. The company were bought out by another company. They're not the same hose. They're not as lightweight. I don't think they last as long, and they're not as quite as kink proof. It's a different hose. And so I just kind of experiment around and try to find a good hose. It's sometimes hard to do.
Okay. So the Flexogen, current Flexogens are not the same.
They're not the same as the ones I got excited about a few years ago. The company was bought out. The company that makes it now is the one that starts with a G. But it's not the same. It's not the same formulation. It's not the same hose that it was when I recommended it a number of years ago.
I'm still searching for a kink-free hose.
Yeah, you know, there will never be an absolutely kink-free hose, and that's a long discussion, but Flexogen was nice because it really was difficult to kink it, and the good thing was it was very lightweight and very supple and lasted a long, long time.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, good to hear from you. We got to take a break. We're going to be back. I got lots of photos to identify. Dan, I'm going to do that one real quick. She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. We'll be back.
With Guguza, I want to be. Because Guguza is so crazy over me. Guguza grows in Italy. They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian charm. I call